I normally would like pump the show and say we're going to talk about all kinds of stuff. It's really more of just hanging out and you sharing some pretty awesome news that just happened. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to kick back with my Dr. Pepper and just listen to what's going on. I think this show in particular, we'll talk a little bit about raising capital, mm-hmm. what you're looking for, why you took this money versus mm-hmm. other. And then maybe go back a little bit in time. You're a YC guy. Mm-hmm. I think a lot to be learned there. You've got relatives that have gone through Techstars.
Yep.
We're in the process, and it'll come out in the next week or so, that Technoria's raised a pretty significant round. Our new website just went live now with a listener app and all this other great stuff. But one of the things that we're going to be taking on is this thing that I've created called a co-op. Mm-hmm. And it's a unique play. And it's sort of my interpretation of listening to 500 of people like you who've been through YC and Techstars being like, I loved this, I didn't like this. Here are things that finally I'm hoping speak right to the founders. So without any more of my ramblingness, let's talk about the breaking news, because that's why you're here.
Sure. Those are all good things to touch on, though. It's excited to touch on each of those points. But it sounds like a big day in Chicago news. Like, you guys had released your news today. We also just announced that we closed a $5.5 million Series B. So that brings the total for us to 11.5. Baron Gia from Detroit led the round, but as we were talking about earlier, Hyde Park Angels from Chicago participated. They also were in our A, and our Series A lead, Go Ahead VC, participated as well. So it was good to have folks from previous rounds, as well as just a new firm to work with. So Baron Gia will be joining the board along with Go Ahead, who's already on it.
So before we get into the influence market mm-hmm. and that stuff, because I think it's really interesting. We've had you on the show before just to talk about influencers. But I want to talk a little bit about what you mentioned with Hyde Park Angels and your other original leader staying in on the round.
Yeah.
One, congratulations to you. I think it speaks very, very highly of their confidence in their initial investment. Which
Thanks.
Usually, I mean, unless it's a massive secondary that comes in where like they just can't afford to stay in the game, usually when you see the grand exodus of the original investors, that's kind of like a little red flag that maybe things aren't so good.
Yep.
But we were just talking about this before we started the official start of this show. And that was about the fact that Hyde Park Angels, I just love what Pete and those guys are doing in Chicago. I think, you know, I don't want to crap on the Chicago investor scene, because we've grown a ton and it's been amazing.
It has been, even the last, like, so Pop Pays is only 5 years old, but it's changed dramatically since then. And we both have a lot more capital, but a lot more support. And as we were talking about, like, HPA is a good example of, like, they've now got a lot of characteristics of what people think of from these large firms like Insight, et cetera, who have a huge, a big staff to help with things like recruiting and fundraising strategy. And so, yeah, we've gotten a lot of support. A lot of our funds have come from Chicago and just the Midwest in general. So, yeah, from the day we started till now, it's a totally different landscape, and it's been much better for Chicago startups.
I feel like the big thing that really kind of irked me, and honestly, the reason that I've gotten into, I've decided to steer Technoria in this direction, mm-hmm. other than I'd like to make money at some point. Media is fun, as you know, but there's a business side of it that is ever changing, and it's tough.
It's real tough.
We
had to do a lot of, just been hiring folks for PopPays. A lot of them come from media and publishing, and
they come running to you. They come running to
the
you.
The refugees.
Save me.
But as part of it, it's interesting. We do a lot of like reference calls, and we take those very seriously. And it was interesting, like, learning a lot from talking with the publishers, like these CEO of publishing firms or companies in that space, around like just the dramatic change that's happened in the last, in the same time period. Like, it's crazy that I feel like every 2 years now, things are just changing 100%. And a lot of it is the big tech companies they've had a huge influence on all of us. It's that space in particular is one of the most challenging and fast moving.
I mean, literally, not to pat myself on the back, but when I was at Medill, when I was at Medill, the Northwestern's kind of media school, I was ostracized because I was like pointing at this big tidal wave. I was like, mm-hmm. you guys know that this is up to, the boat is capsized.
Yeah. And
tomorrow I'm at Medill speaking.
Really?
Yeah. So I was told basically, get the hell out of here.
Yep.
And now they're like, no, but.
You know
what's
sad? When that happens, it doesn't even feel good. You know,
no.
like the there's no "I told you so." It's more of like a
Well, they skip right over it.
Yeah, and that's more like a, well, all right, let me roll up my sleeves and let's see if we can work on this together, because it is an issue. You've seen some publishers go towards paid content. That seems to be working for a couple of the big ones.
Even that one, though, it's got to be, like, if it is not very niche, very specific, and very high-quality content,
yeah,
that's a slippery slope.
It is tough, and I've seen a lot of them go into content creation. Like, for example, people who used to own audiences now have dived into content creation, but yeah. I think even that, like, similar to publishers, agencies are feeling the crunch around, like, the way that we're creating content has changed, and that was a big part of what, like, PopPays is trying to do in this space, is recognizing that how we create content has changed and that we need software to manage it, because it happens so fast. And yeah. As an example, like, for a lot of our brands these days, and brands and agencies currently, they just need to produce so much more content for social, for their properties, that they work with people in a different style. Like, instead of doing things centralized in-house, sometimes they're tapping a lot of contractor talent, like creators, influencers, just to create content for them. But the landscape for agencies has changed just as dramatically as publishers.
So, I mean, I think we've talked about this a little bit, and I know for a fact that in numerous client conversations, this has come up. Dose, I've talked to Emerson.
Yeah, love, sure. I love Emerson. I think we talked about him last.
We always talk about Emerson. You can't, if you know him, you can't. Yeah. It goes on to that, to Harry Potter, and it goes downhill in a hurry. No, but we're in that, speaking of that, we're in the space of creating content. So, like, for us, what I found was, and this is really not out of any sort of experience or intelligence or anything, more just I don't like it. Sponsored content and canned air, I'm not a fan of. When I took over Technora, I was like, the one thing I refuse to do is stick a logo on the wall and be like, give me your money. I'll take it if you force me. But we don't even sell it.
Yep.
I want to create content that I think will help your brand resonate with my audience. If you want my audience and you want me to run a JLL ad that's just JLL, like, that's not going to resonate. But if you want us to run an ad for JLL that says, listen, this is what a struggle for a founder is when picking space, that will resonate.
Yep.
And so we're like doing it in our voice. It's very much kind of like the Onion, the great content, the ads. If you want to advertise or sponsor us, we create the content. It's in our voice.
Yeah, it's a really interesting, people are having to figure out how to monetize these new channels, like the way that they're done currently, whether it's like a podcast and it's, you know, Joe Rogan talking about sponsors the first 5 minutes, or it's, people creating things and looking for brands to sponsor that, like, they have a great idea for a piece of content and looking for relevant sponsors for it. It's, a lot of people are trying to figure out how to monetize content effectively.
I can say, if you're a fan of the Mark Maron show, the dude knows how to throw a sponsor. Oh my God. He just drops an F-bomb.
Yeah.
It was like, and then he'd be like, Salesforce is, I use Salesforce for all that. He just, like, goes in over, like, that's your live read, dude.
There are some of them, like, podcasts are really interesting. Like, I'm a huge fan. I mean, I
actually like the advertising opportunities in podcasts. I think mid-roll is a different thing. I'm not a big mid-roll guy.
They seem to be working well, just in the sense of, like, anecdotally, like, one thing I think they're lacking is analytics. But, like, anecdotally, a lot of people have reported high ROI from them. And there's also just a lot of people that have continued to double down on that channel.
Yep.
And so they must be converting well. But that's interesting, because theoretically you could just, like, skip, you know, these sections, but I think people are good enough at, like, kind of mixing it in with the content.
So this is actually something that we're not saying that we do it well at all, if at all even, but something that I've really taken an art to. Like, I really really study it. I really enjoy it. I'll think, again, using Mark Maron, like, he, aside from his random swearing and then dropping the companies, when I listen to the show, I just know that he's a Squarespace guy. Just know that he's a stamps.com guy. Like, I just know.
Yeah.
Because I listen to it. And to your point, I could skip by it. But I don't, maybe partially out of respect for him, but then also, like, I think that if you pick 52 ads and you keep shuffling, like, that's my issue with mid-roll.
Yeah.
If I sell 50 ads across my podcast, I lose sight of it. Yeah. And then I blank out. But if you are a guy who only goes with Chase or B of A or whoever.
And that's, I think that, like, people who have, like, let's say that it's Technori or it's Mark Maron or any, if it's a personality, like, them picking long-term sponsors seem to have a great effect. Like, you know, let's say the Cash App sponsors, you know, Pod Save America or whatever. You can, when you develop these long-term ones, the challenge on the advertisers to keep that content fresh. And so like you can't just run the same thing or it gets annoying, but that long-term collaboration seems to be more popular now. And we're seeing a really analogous thing with creators and influencers. Like a lot of brands are kind of creating a user group of people, like of creators and influencers that they know actually are fans of the brands and work well with them. Yep. And engaging with them over a period of time instead of a transactional thing. And so that seems to be working well because people then, yeah, like we're super perceptive as consumers and we can tell when something is like a genuine endorsement and when it's just like you're getting paid. That's why Pop Pay is like, we have some creators that are getting paid just for, you know, a single transaction for like creating content, and that, you know, they don't need to be, it might just be a content gig where they're just purely making stuff for a brand and delivering assets, and brands are using that to scale content creation. But on the influence side, like if a brand is looking for creators and influencers to post about them and drive awareness and effects, we have seen that like long-term engagements perform really well because I think the audience like starts to believe, you know, they recognize like, oh, this is an earnest fan.
So let's get into the weeds a little bit with Pop Pace, because here's the part that I think differentiates. It's the reason that more money has been thrown at you and why I watch what you guys do very closely. So you sort of mentioned this in the beginning a little bit, or at least you kind of alluded to it. One of the big problems, and us the same way, so like we do this in our voice stuff, we create the content, but we only keep I never have more than 5 sponsors ever in a year. Mm-hmm. We don't like expand out of that. Like, yeah. If you're not with us on content in the studio and at the event, I don't want you.
Yeah.
Because you're, one, I'm not going to be able to guarantee anything.
Yep.
And two, if we're going to bring you in, I have to be able to connect you with our audience, and they have to be able to want to use you. And if they don't like meeting you and seeing you everywhere, that's bad for me. So they don't come here anymore.
Yeah.
But the problem that I'm solving for them accidentally, which you guys built your entire business around. So kudos to you. I found it by accident.
We probably did too.
Well, we'll see. Is the agency problem you mentioned.
Yeah.
Which is that influencer marketing, and I'm not even going to say marketing because I really don't think it's influencer marketing. It's influencer creation. It's just content that people really like.
Mm-hmm.
And there's very oftentimes not science behind it. Emerson will disagree, but there's not science behind it all the time. And what happens is large companies can't keep up with it.
Yes.
Yeah. Something trending happens today and the meme goes out today. Something's got to happen.
That's huge. So I feel like the biggest trend, like, so we've been talking a lot about this raise around like how Pop Pays is changing the way people create content or helping that come to fruition. We've seen this thing where like the speed has changed so much in today's age where marketers need to be able to like, when if they see something happening, they need to be able to put out a brief and get content back quick enough so that it's relevant.
Yep.
And if you can do that, it's really powerful. And so we've seen a lot of people want to license Pop Pays so they can have a platform where they know they can put out a brief and in a couple hours get creators who've applied and start working with them and then get content back in a matter of like days or a week instead of the traditional process, which is like
months.
You know, yeah, it's months, like the traditional models. And even if you're thinking of one thing we realized that was important was that like, even if a brand is like, you know, working with creators and influencers and maybe even a platform, if they are, you know, putting up a campaign and letting people bid on it, they've lost a lot of like ability to be responsive and agile. Like they're just then still centrally planning campaigns and initiatives. And so we realize we need to be giving tools to brands and agencies to let them be more ambitious with their content. So they know that they have this confidence that I can get content if I need it within a week for whatever, whether it's a new business pitch or a local event like Lala and something happened there.
Yep. So to your point on this, I mean, I obviously agree 100%. One of the things that I found in this sort of search of talking to our potential sponsors and then even people that aren't sponsors that we want to create content for was that they've got two choices right now. The first choice is that they go through an agency that's trusted. They've been approved. They can create content. Mm-hmm. The problem with that is usually it's what you see on a TV ad if you're lucky. Mm-hmm. If they're not a great company that does great creative, then it's really shitty stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's crappy and it takes a long time for them to make for no apparent reason.
Sometimes, so we've seen this with agencies where they're searching for solutions. A lot of agencies have been licensing Pop Pays to be able to rapidly create content on all these different channels because now there's like not only Instagram and Snap and like YouTube, but there's Stories and IGTV and all these new things that are popping out. So it gives agencies the tools to be like have a diverse array of content. But yeah, the problem has been like the way that agencies were originally structured, and a lot are moving past this model, but the way they're originally structured was to like create a couple of TV commercials, and it's you can usually create really high quality content, but it takes a long time and is expensive. But the downside is even like that really great studio content, like most of the time doesn't perform well.
No, it doesn't perform on social.
So what it's the weirdest thing.
For doesn't,
it's like, exactly.
Like I would rather look at a grainy square video that like I kind
of
want
it's
it
like
to
the
be
paradox
what I
want. Of social.
Yeah, like I want it to look like I think it looks, not what it actually is. So there's that. Then there's like what I've run into a ton is the approval process. So businesses have to have a like this, everything is approved 52 times. Mm-hmm. By the time we got that, like the hit trend is gone. Mm-hmm. So one of the things that I've been kind of talking to companies about is, and this is interesting because I usually just tell them like about you guys, mm-hmm. but in general, what comes to me is like if you had a stable of influencers who became trusted, it's like mm-hmm. we use these same seven people for these seven categories. I don't have to go through this lead time. Mm-hmm. I can just know that you're going to create 50 things a week because that's just what you do. That's how you make your money.
We're trying to help marketers chip away at all these friction points to being agile with content. That being one of them, like, you know, let's say your approval process involves like vetting a creator and influencer's account as well as vetting their content. Well, yeah, if you've got a user group that you trust, then you take care of part of that. But we've been putting so much time and effort, like a lot of the money from our Series A, we invested in product and engineering efforts around workflow to make those friction points go away. So like we did a lot of work around smoothing out the content approval process and like building the tools that an agency would use. We've even seen agencies like leverage that software just for working with creators they're already contracting. Like it just, the software itself makes their approval process more sane and easy to work with. So that's been really encouraging. That like most people either come to us for like access to a creative community and also the software to like make managing that content creation process easy. But for the first time, we've been seeing people like just wanting to leverage the software outside of the community.
Well, as we continue to peel the layers back on this, the other thing that's interesting is if you talk to any of the companies and you say like you should become an influencer, you're the CEO of a company, mm-hmm. especially a tech company, you're trying to get out into whatever this world is mm-hmm. and people need to trust you and say like, I'm telling you the future of this kind of tech. Trust me.
Yep.
They don't have time to answer questions in real time. Mm-hmm. And so the workflow doesn't work for them. Mm-hmm. So it's like one of those things of like, we try to help them by creating content for them and leaving it kind of queued up for them.
Yeah.
But quite honestly, they're like, some people just aren't going to be an influencer. I'm sorry, you're just not funny.
Yeah,
just you just don't strike with people.
I've been coming to terms with that myself slowly. Like I remember I put in so much work to get like a base amount of followers when we started PopPays. And it's hard work. And it's funny because like
post the Burning Man picture. Yeah, that's all you have to do.
I'll be doing that this year. But like the it was like constant grinding effort. And so it's interesting. A lot of folks like it is a grind to get to a certain level, and then the job looks easy. And so a lot of people see like the lax lifestyle, and like a lot of people aspire to that because it looks so good. But man, it's a lot
grind.
Of grind. It's lots of grind.
It is. There's a lot that goes into this looking this shitty.
You have to want like
like it's
you have to
believe me.
You have to want to like. You know, some people are natural at sharing, and I tend to be heads down for sometimes, you know, it's
I'm awful at sharing.
Yeah. And so like I but some people go to experience and they're focused on like how they can best capture it. And that adds so much value in some sense. Like my co-founder from PopPays always took a lot of content, and I'm so grateful that we have this content from the early days. And you can see that when he left and joined Instagram, actually, and you know the internal PopPays content was not there after that. And we have some teammates that are better at it now, but yeah, it's helpful to have someone who like you know documenting things, but you also want to be present in the moment. It's the age old trade off.
And I'm awful at it. So that's why I've got my team of guys to like take pictures of all this crazy stuff that goes on, because I usually am like zero, like I go off into a zone, a cloud. I don't see anything. It's just white. And it's just, you know, we're just having a conversation.
You need that time to like, I really value the time for deep work. And I try to spend a lot of my day crafting like that time, like leaving stretches of time open And even, but even some, even creators need to do that. Like, Jason Peterson, the CCO of Havas in Chicago, you know, he's got a million followers and, you know, runs this, runs a creative team at these, this group of agencies. But I think I heard him say he takes like time to walk around the city and shoot, almost every day.
See, that's the issue I have is like, if you look at my personal Instagram or personal anything, it is like a whole bunch of pictures of just you and I sitting here and then nothing. And then a bunch of pictures of me like half blacked out cruising around the city. Like, it's just,
it sounds like you have your theme.
I've got a great theme. My life is awesome. But, that's it. So like, let's talk a little bit about like, we've talked kind of how we've both sort of grown into what we're doing and learned about it. Like, one of the areas that I think you actually have done a fantastic job of just watching the growth trajectory of what you guys have done, and how things started at YC, Y Combinator for the layman. I don't know who would listen to this show who doesn't know Y Combinator. You probably shouldn't listen to this show if you don't know Y Combinator.
Yeah, I mean, it's Y Combinator. It's actually interestingly a really cool name because it's about a program that makes other programs. So it's a good name, but it's kind of clunky.
Yeah.
And so yeah, everyone just
they made it sexy.
They did. I mean,
that's the thing that's crazy. Think about that. Y Combinator, which just sounds like marketing nightmare.
Yeah.
And it's awesome.
Sometimes it works, but I mean, everyone just, you know, names that do well are usually like short and two syllables, and so that shortening to YC just, it's hugely helpful. But yeah, it's they're definitely a central figure. I'm sure they're encountering their own growth challenges because like they started out as a small batch with like eight companies, like a Dropbox here, a Reddit there, and now they're struggling with, in the sense of like, you know, they've
got 3,000 companies.
They definitely over like
it's more than 1,500.
Exactly, it's about at least, let's say 1,500, but they have 100 a batch, and they're encountering their own new host of challenges around like, how do we support companies afterwards? To that end, they've actually released like a growth stage program for companies that are of later stage, like let's say, you know, 7,500 people.
I actually saw that. Yeah. So I guess one of the common thing here, I guess we want to touch on is your experiences here. I think we'll agree on some parts and we probably won't agree on others. I mean, for me, I don't think we're looking to scale. I mean, I say this now, but I don't think I'm looking to scale Technori and our efforts in the investment stage to be Y Combinator.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's more of like, we have a board, we have access to a lot of people who I think could help a lot of companies.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, if we can make more money, you get bigger and you will deal with those challenges. But the problem that I find with a lot of the accelerators, and I'm going to set aside, obviously, Y Combinator on its own, Techstars, 2A, I think they're definitely great, but there's some things.
Mm-hmm.
AngelPad is another one, 500 startups. Like, it starts to get into this, and there's like 81 incubators in Chicago now or something.
Oh, really?
Stupid.
Wow.
It's a crazy number. Now, granted, it's probably mostly co-working spaces that call themselves incubators, but whatever.
It's sexy to call yourself one. So yeah, maybe some co-working spaces.
Yeah. If only Regis had known. If only Regis, now they're getting into it, but if only they had known. No, but the point I'm getting at is, I have found, and again, feel free to like jam the shit out of this if you don't agree. I have found that one of the problems that I'm seeing from the founders that come and sit on the stage and talk about their experience is it reminds me of the same antiquated process that is school. The reason that I had a hard time in school, other than the fact that I drank a lot, was the fact that I just was bored. And I was thinking, I get it. Like, I know enough. I know I should learn more, but I am a self-learner. I'll go home and I'll read a book.
Mm-hmm.
I need to get selling. I need to build my product. I need to focus on the operational things.
Yeah.
And I find that a lot of the accelerators, and maybe this is by design, but I don't think the founders who are going in and coming out are the right person. Everyone is applying to X accelerator because they want to say, I'm a Techstars company and I have 125 at 5% and yada, yada, yada. Those are things that describe my company. And I never once accepted the fact that I worked for 15 years in this industry. I don't need an MBA. I don't need to be taught how to, you know, figure out QuickBooks. Like, I don't need this stuff. But they give up their equity and they do all this stuff and they waste 3 months going through a process that at the end, they should have just been selling their business.
I think, I totally agree that, like,
not exclusively, of course.
But I totally agree that, like, the biggest problem of like, school is that it's like, if it was only project based, it would be incredibly more impactful. Like, even having a project, and if there's lectures, you can at least then when you're getting the lecture, you can think of like, oh, this applies to this project. And the most important thing for a startup is to get out there and start selling. And it was some of the mistakes we made. Like, when I quit my job at an agency and myself and two co-founders started Pop Pays, I spent the first like couple weeks building a 24-page business plan. And when you aren't out, like what we should have been doing is selling. And even arguably, like a lot of the time I spent just pitching investors, I was spending too much time like making the info that they said they needed, instead of if I had sold more and we get more traction, it'd be easier to raise.
I would rather walk in with a 3-page deck that just says, I know where I'm going, here's how I'm going to get there, and here's our proof.
Or just, yeah, exactly. That if you like, raising on traction is an order of magnitude easier than raising on an idea. And so, yeah, I agree that if when starting something, like the best thing to do is get out and market and focus on that, those results. And it really, like, meeting regularly at an early stage, if you're an early stage company going through an accelerator, meeting regularly and kind of trying to boost this one metric, like sales or whatever, week over week, really gets you focused on like, all right, what can I be doing now that will like boost this? And that's the most key point. Whenever you're not going, like actually talking to users, like closing deals, writing code, that's when you start to stray from.
Whenever you're not spending time on the things that make you the money you're going to make, mm-hmm. I don't mean money even. It's just more about progress. Mm-hmm. Anytime if you set an objective, mm-hmm. and you look at your schedule and you ask yourself, what percentage of this time is actually contributing to me getting the progress?
Yeah.
And if you're not, then you need to cut it out.
The hardest thing, often I think other people might be able to see it easier than you. And so that's probably where an accelerator could help too, is like the mentorship around like prioritization, like looking at someone's priorities and saying like, will this get you to where you want to be? Because most of us, when we both come up in school and we're doing homework to please teachers, or we have a job where, like, if you're at a really large organization, you can be just simply doing things for a person above you in the hierarchy, not necessarily something that's adding like value and moving the needle. It's really easy to lose track on what matters, and yep. So like kind of shaking off that stuff that we are taught through school and actually focusing on the stuff that matters. I'd say one of the biggest skill gaps that I had, and I think a lot of people have, is the ability to be outputs oriented. Like I would work on something really hard, and just because I worked on it hard and did a lot on it, even if it didn't work, I feel like I did my job. But it's way more about just getting the result than doing the inputs.
So I got a kind of a double sided piece mm-hmm. of this next one, because this is my focus, mm-hmm. And what I have found to be the biggest challenge to me getting to this point, and what I see is the big challenge for people. And then there's also the word mentor, mm-hmm. which I know, I think you're pretty big into the mentor.
Yeah. I mean, I have, informal ones that have helped a lot. A couple of, like YC's been good in that regard, but I think Techstars like built their, I don't know as much about their program, but I think they call themselves like mentorship driven, in the sense of like, they view that as like their key driver.
And Logan here in Chicago has done a nice job, I think, of really trying to reinvigorate that, the mm-hmm. mentor thing. So I say that in one hand, and then I'm going to shit on.
Okay.
So like, I actually believe I have mentors as well, and people mm-hmm. that I talk to, and you use whatever term you want for it. Mm-hmm. But I think that mentor, like old school advertising, has gotten lazy, to use a random.
Yeah, yeah.
We, like, a lot of these groups have gotten to the point where it's like, oh, well, of course, if we put a bunch of smart people in the room, of course you're going to all be successful. And it's like, no. It's got to either be extremely curated, which is one of the things Y Combinator has done so well. But like, I don't like the pattern I'm seeing in founders that has them leaning on their successes, leaning on the future that somebody else had.
There's also an issue, like, people often will go out to a bunch of people who are very smart and ask them for advice, but I feel there's a lot of benefit from someone knowing the context of you
for
and your
sure.
company. And so having like a long-term relationship is helpful. You got to have the right chemistry. But yeah, this sounds weird too, because I do value them highly, but a lot of times, no one's going to know the answer better. Like, even with mentors, very, very few times does someone actually come in and just solve your problem.
Yeah, usually, well, never,
like, really. Yeah, like I think maybe like probably Sam Altman has for me once, and it feels like your parent doing your homework for you. But never. Like, even YC partners in general, like, they're just asking you questions and saying like, you know, well, what do you think? And they're just basically doing the Socratic method, or like turning it on you. And so I think that mentorship in a weird way can be overrated, in the sense that people also need to realize that like the answer is almost always within them, and the mentor can be really helpful with their experience to help you reflect on that. But it's not that they're not solving your problems usually.
What I think is the negative outcome of this is that a lot of the founders become reliant on affirmation. And there's this need that, like, well, if my mentor says it's a bad idea, and it's like, dude, no, go with your gut. You know,
the classic one is, like, if your mentor says X, Y, and Z, like, a lot of times people ignore a gut feeling that they shouldn't ignore. Usually no advice is true is like when it's uncomfortable, but you feel like it's true and that sucks. Like that's advice. Like,
I've said this a dozen times to people. I say it to people on the show. I say it on Instagram whenever I want to get quick clicks.
Yep.
Literally, don't ever take advice from someone you would not trade places with.
Yeah.
If that dude like is next to you and his life sucks, maybe. I'm not saying you're not going to learn from him. That's different.
Yeah.
Maybe watch, don't ask.
Yeah. And even let's say that, even if you have a boss at your workplace or a mentor and they're good in one regard but not good in other regards, still, I think that like asking them questions can help you calibrate. Like maybe you know they're biased in a certain way and their answer has that bias, but like, it helps you calibrate like what you think about it based on how they're approaching it.
You could ask Sam. So my executive producer is the chief of staff now of the company. So he has to wear a collared shirt.
Yeah, big time.
He's big time now. No, but he could attest to this. Literally, when we go to meetings, I talk to companies, I will ask and repeat the same exact statement to like five different people because I want to see what like your response is to there. So then in my head, it's like
you're basically
in the
running an experiment. Like
testing. Yeah, that's basically all I'm doing.
You're calibrating like and that's really important. But you're basically like calibrating your own intuition around.
I want to know if I'm crazy.
You're not crazy. Like, well, good people are.
That's the thing. So like, no, I said this to, speaking of Hyper Angels, I had a meeting with Pete Wilkins, and I have another one coming up with him, and I said to him he doesn't know the details of our new deal, but like I was talking to him beforehand, telling him here's what he's going to do. He's like, Scott, I think that's a stupid fucking idea. And I was like, that's awesome because that means I got to go. I got to do it. He's like, you know what? The last few times I told you this, it was a good idea.
So yeah, it sounds also like a weird goal, but post-raise, I was like, I need to be a little bit more crazy in a sense. Like you need to be like...
You got to push your boundaries.
You have to. Like, we need to be free to be creative and you can't get stuck in a rut. And so I wanted to take a step back after the raise and spend more time reflecting. I've many times heard something is a bad idea and it worked out. Pop pays being one of them.
Yeah.
It's a fine line between like, you can't be stubborn. It really, like, that's probably one of the hardest skills is like to assess when you should be pushing forward and when you should be listening. And yeah, I usually find that there's a certain class of advice where it like makes your heart sink a little bit because you know it's true and you don't want to listen to it, but you think it's right. Like that's the important time to change your mind, I think.
I like to say, and I've heard this from Terry Howerton too, bullish, not boorish.
Mm.
I'm bullish on it.
I like that, yeah.
I'm like, I'm going to push you, but I'm not an idiot. I'm not boorish. I'm going to wait.
I think there's an A16Z1 like strong conviction.
Is that the drug from Limitless?
Sure. No, I think so. Andreessen Horowitz, I think they also invested in like a nootropics company. There's going to be some crazy stuff in the next couple of years, I'm sure. But they have something around like... strong convictions weakly held, as in like I'm very strongly convicted about a point, but I'm open to like giving or like open to soliciting feedback. And I hear most hedge fund managers are like that too. Like they're interested in hearing, like they are seeking the truth. Like they want the edge, you know.
If you want the fastest way into a second meeting, tell the guy like just fight with him.
Yeah,
like, I mean that in a respectful way.
Yeah, I think a lot of truths
push back.
Yeah, and I think a lot of truths are unsaid around like a good way of getting a second meeting or getting if you're making media getting attention is like just kind of saying the thing that everyone is thinking. But you know that just leads you into controversy. But like that's definitely a good way of like arriving at the truth is just like bring up a subject and start talking about.
Well, this is the perfect segue into our final frontier of this conversation because the last part that I think is going to be our big differentiator. And if you know the guys that we're kind of in partnering up with and the people that are joining the board, which everyone will find out soon, it's coming out.
Yeah, I heard a sneak peek. They sound great.
All sneak peek. But these guys know what they're doing. They've built $3 billion worth of shareholder value. And here's what I think we have to offer that's different. And this is what Y does. And to a lesser extent, for certain people at Techstars, those who know to ask the right questions get it. You got to know like being an insider. Mm-hmm. You got to know how the real business works. That's the biggest thing that I think most people don't realize, like how reality
yes.
works.
So some of the advisors, I don't want to spoil the news, but some of the advisors that you, that are joining that, I've leaned on for personal and like work advice before. And one of the most, like probably like the most helpful part, besides the fact that they know the business, so they can like counsel you through almost like founder therapy. The most helpful part is like realizing that all the crazy stuff you're doing, like in the work you're doing to like make have progression on these various fronts, all the crazy stuff you encounter is actually normal. And so like it's the folks that have gone through that, like the part of that reason is the mentorship in that kind of regard is helpful because like they can be directing you towards like, oh no, like yeah, actually everyone goes through that and here's how I got through it. And
I would even take it a step further into the operations mm-hmm. part. This is the thing I think ultimately if I were to say, you know, like every good startup's supposed to start with solving a problem, if we wanted to look at Technoria and say what problem is this co-op trying to solve, mm-hmm. this is it. I think a lot of people come out of college, myself included. I didn't come from a family that was in, I mean, they're entrepreneurs, but like real estate one-off things. Mm-hmm. I didn't have this background. I didn't have cash. Mm-hmm. I didn't have all this stuff. I came into this world green. I didn't know what the hell. What I learned along the way was what a real meeting looks like.
Yeah.
What is a waste of time versus a real meeting?
Yeah.
What is, you know, how do you get someone to buy into your value? How do you, how is real business conducted? And that's the part to me that I think, you know, in particular, with our focus continuing to be on like the female and minority underrepresented groups, they have almost zero experience.
Yep. So
in that.
I would say like there's been some good stuff recently. Like I was listening to some good stuff recently out of Gimlet about like diversity inclusion in entrepreneurship and the investor landscape. And to the degree where I felt, for example, that you know when I started PopPays, I knew of one person in venture capital,
young. So
I was out of 22 or something. Yeah. But basically, I knew that my dad's company, he's in biz dev at a company, and I knew that company had raised funding. I never met them, but I was like, that's the only time I've heard of VC. And so I was like, didn't they raise? Can I talk with that person? They're in Chicago, right? And through that person, spidered out and finally met enough people. I thought I was green to it, but then hearing experiences of like other people, like underrepresented founders that try to get in the space, it's a whole nother level. And so it's like, I think part of the benefit of the mentorship networks is like the benefit, the most critical benefit is like mentors in a certain way can solve all problems, because any problem you encounter, there's probably like a people solution, whether it's like funding, you need to meet investor, or code, you need to meet a coder. Like the mentors can more than anyone else help you break into a network.
Yep.
I'd say.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think not to oversimplify it, but in the end, the problem we're trying to solve with it and the problem that I think you got mm-hmm. solved for you at mm-hmm. Y Combinator, and also just in your own experience, is you don't know what you don't know.
That's true.
Like how do I get you to understand like this is how things really operate?
What's that George Bush quote? I'll probably, he butchered the unknowns and knowns thing, but yeah, it's the things you don't know that'll really get you. And as a classic example, I always reference this one around like we went through YC and learned about like 83Bs and how you should file these things when you're starting a company. It's this small piece of paperwork where it can truly like tank things if you're a company and don't file them and you should have. And so it's like both little things, like little gotchas like that, as well as like things that you said around like how am I approaching sales correctly? Like, am I just totally going down the wrong path and wasting my time? So it's all those things. I think that I think it's much needed. I know there's been a big increase in accelerators, but it's coincided with a huge increase in just entrepreneurial activity.
Just a ton of stuff.
But I still think that like to the degree where it helps young companies so much, I still think they're very needed. And I think it's only going to add more to the space.
I think so too. Yeah. I think it's we just need to start, especially in Chicago, to start picking spaces mm-hmm. to play in. Like mm-hmm. if you're really early stage company, you have no experience in anything, go to an accelerator that's going to teach you mm-hmm. the bees. Mm-hmm. If you're going to go to, you know, need to learn sales, go somewhere that is like focused. Yeah. Don't just go.
And I think you said like so the people you're starting with are great. And I think that it's accelerators. You got to. It is a network that you're building yourself too. So it's like, it's good to start it with a certain size of cohort. And I think like, as you start to scale them, they actually can get off track. And so if they're too big. And so I think that like at this scale, they're probably the most effective. So I would say like the people that are just joining for this is like, I think the biggest effect will be like the folks at the ground floor of of this because like you're such a tight community and like that's what really matters.
Well, look at Y Combinator, really. Yeah. I mean they've had some success, but the early badges like
crazy.
What? It's like Box, Dropbox, like
Reddit,
all like the same room.
Yep. Yeah.
Incredible. There's like $1 trillion right there.
Yeah.
Corbett, this is amazing.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
It's good to be back.
Congrats on the raise.
Thank you.
And I imagine we'll see you in a couple months when you raise some more.
Yeah. I was gonna say hopefully we see each other when I'm like in between us raising money, but yeah, if
we can do that too.
It's at least motivation for us to raise the C.
If you follow our Instagram account, you can just follow me either here, you can show up, or you can just go find me along the Riverwalk, hammered, wandering about.
You got one more follower now.
I'm sold. Like it. Awesome. Yeah. Thank you so much.
Yeah, good. Appreciate come in. Thank you.
Where do people go to learn more about Popular Pace?
So if you're a creator, download the iOS app or use our web app. And for brands, just go to popularpays.com and start a campaign with us now.
Very cool.
Thank you.
And of course, you can catch this episode and more at technori.com. You can listen to all these podcasts on listen.technori.com. It's an exciting new little tool that we built. I think you'll probably get a kick out of it. And you can follow us on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram at Technori, or you can follow me at Katoon. Boom. That's a wrap.